This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 11th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to the show, the subject of which is hype. We recorded this programme last Friday afternoon on the day David Bowie's latest and last album, Black Star, was released. It was Bowie's 69th birthday. There was a sense of hype and expectation about the release, and it was this and the current movie awards season that got us thinking about hype. 3 days later, at time of talking, the pop world is very different, of course. Rather than do a Bowie tribute programme, which would have been pleasurable and reminiscent, we'd just be adding to the pile of media wreaths, perhaps. You will lay your own, maybe just by looking out of the window and listening to a favourite song. So in a strange world in which it's no longer possible to ask oneself, I wonder what David Bowie is doing right now, we'll play you the show we made that attempts to answer the question, whatever happened to hype? So here we are. Welcome to my guests, Alice Vincent, entertainment writer for the Daily Telegraph, David Hepworth, music magazine legend, smash hits, Q, Mojo and The Word, to name but a few, would have been mere fanzines without him. And last but not least, Emily Bryce Perkins, who is Whisper It, a publicist extraordinaire. Welcome, everybody around the table. Thanks for... we need to get some hype going, I think.
So excited right now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm talking about hype. It's like a stage
time,
direction
yeah.
from Waiting for Godot. They do not move. Let's start things off, maybe, David, with you. After a long career of being hyped too as a storied magazine editor, what do you make of the state of the hype industry at the moment?
Hype is not what it was. What happens nowadays, it strikes me, is the most powerful form of hype is people hype themselves. You know, and social media are the way is a perfect tool for people doing this. You know, you were saying at the opening, you know, are we all excited? It's what fascinates me is the use of words like stoked. Yeah. On Twitter, people are stoked about absolutely everything, you know. A new sandwich, they're stoked about it, you know. And that shows how it's devalued the kind of the vocabulary for describing these things.
Surely you say the only person that could be stoked is Gordon the Big Engine or Thomas the Tank Engine, right? Is that where that comes from? Emily, you were nodding along some of David's comments there about self-publicity. And I wonder in what realm we're talking, whether we're talking in the online realm, whether we're talking about articles that are sort of seem to be only barely written by a journalist, maybe mostly a PR company. What were you nodding along to?
I was
there?
Noddling with the
noddling.
Noddling.
Why not?
Noddling. I was talking about a noddle earlier. Ignore me. I was nodding along. So with the sort of social helping people promote themselves, that's a good thing and a bad thing. So that's why you still, I argue, need publicists to help, because that's why Adele can't send her own tweets, because she'll be drunk at home. This is what she openly said, you know. And then suddenly she'll tweet and go, you know, and her management are going, oh. So you do still need, there's a level of protection in between the self-promotion on something like Twitter. But it's no different, like the online space is no different to that person being in the right bar in Soho and going and talking themselves up. It's just kind of another, this is the newer version of that, speaking in the right space about yourself. An old boss said to me, if you were, they were saying that I was really good at PRing myself, and they were like, this week, if you'd have PR'd any of our clients as well as you PR yourself on social media, then, you know, we'd be really happy with you. And we're all guilty of it, because as soon as you have access to take a photo of yourself and put it on the internet, like everyone suddenly, people hype their own breakfasts these days. It's just, you know, and that's why it kind of loses meaning. So when you have Bowie coming out with an album, actually hype now will start when the album launches, then, you know, and then from that moment, someone like Beyonce, a year or so ago, she put that album out and she had every single video with the songs when it came out. Suddenly there was the hype and everyone was really excited afterwards. There was no hype before it. And that's because everything's so immediate. Justin Bieber just did it as well. So I think, yeah, hype now, it's still there, but it's just in a completely different way. I think it's kind of from the moment afterwards that you need to kind of, you get the hype and the excitement.
And that's the difficult thing to do, isn't it? Once it's out there.
Yeah.
Because people move on to the next thing.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
Because the people who've been most guilty of this in the last 15 years are the BBC. You know, who it used to be. I used to work as a record player way back when God was a boy. You know? And they would not play a record unless it was out, unless it was in the shops. They say our job is to reflect what people are buying. Then that changed so that they would only play records before they were out to the public. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that's kind of advertising, because what you're doing is saying to the public, here's this record, we've got it, you can't have it. The only place you can get it is on our station.
So there's a sense of hype as being the guardians and the trustees of knowledge, of prowess, or simply of that amazing CD.
The people who love the hype are the media.
But what's really interesting is with Bowie one, you're saying there with the radio stuff, is that actually this was the first record that he's released, because obviously with The Next Day, which was released in 2013, same time on his birthday, which it was on Friday, is that they released a track on Six Music. He had an associated musical in Broadway, which was very well reviewed. He leaked teaser trailer videos on the YouTube channel. It was so much more orchestrated than that surprise rush release that happened 3 years ago.
Coming back to the Beyoncé case, though, is that not because they found that on the previous release, it got people really excited for a short period of time and then it dissipated really quickly?
And I think with the Beyoncé one, it was slightly different. It was slightly more effective because she eked out those videos a little bit more. There was the album release, then there were the videos. And the really clever thing about it, which music journalists the entire world over were really angry about, is that she released it after everyone had filed their year roundups of the best music of the year. And then she goes and releases a brilliant album. And it's like, oh, you know, D'Angelo did the same thing last year. And that's actually a very good move to get a lot of people talking about it on social media.
But you kind of have the hype taken away from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's play. While we collect our thoughts, we'll play a little bit of the Bowie record. I think this is a piece called Lazarus, which is the second track on the LP. We'll collect our thoughts and see how we might follow this hype discussion further. That was Lazarus from the new record by David Bowie called Black Star. That was a wonderful piece of editorial sleight of hand we did there. And we said, let's play a piece of the new Bowie record. It was actually just to give Emily Bryce Perkins an opportunity to take off her jangly bangles. So if you notice, listeners, the difference between the first 5 minutes and the last 20 minutes of this programme, I think it's good. I quite like a bit of aural excitement. We're talking about hype. I want people to sound like they're gesticulating on this show. Right? It's all right. Let's talk now about perhaps whether we've been hyped too. Alice, I wanted to ask you, at the Telegraph Entertainment Desk, you must get a lot of stuff, a lot of invitations, there's a lot of cardboard invitations to things. There's a lot of strange things, especially, you know, Christmas was just, you know, a month around the corner. What sort of have you been hyped about in recent months?
Oh gosh, I've almost lost track. You know, Christmas happened and it was like, oh yes, all these weird bits of Lego and, you know, ironic VHS tapes have all been kind of quietly pushed aside. I think it's different these days. I mean, you say cardboard, you know, invitations, and it's quite nice to receive those
now. It's lovely. It's lovely to receive a cardboard invitation.
Well, it's always lovely, but it's especially lovely because actually more what happens, it's like, oh, crikey, you're giving us a release. This thing is breaking its embargo in 30 minutes and we've got to get a plan together and beat all of our competitors online and make sure that some fan site doesn't have it first and get this copy out the door. I don't, you know, Emily
so
might this, disagree.
Okay, but so there's an element of hype in the rush to be the first, then. In terms of being a journalist, we aren't immune to hype.
Right, we're not immune to it. And I also think that publicists have got savvy and that the really, really big announcements will drop in a way that goes straight to the fans or goes straight to the people who need them first, who will actually share it, rather than a journalist who will ignore their email and then maybe type something up apathetically 2 days in advance, you know. It's all like, whoa, it's happening. This is a really big deal. Look at it kicking off. Let's report on it now.
There was an interesting interview with Lady Gaga's manager a couple of years ago. I don't think he's a manager anymore. But anyway, very successful manager. And he said, the last place I would want her fans to find out about her new record is on the radio.
Right.
And I think that's a really interesting switch, that is. You know, that it's got to go direct to fans. People have got to feel that they have some ownership of it, you know. And so, you know, the media has been disintermediated, you know, as they say, in this process. You know, they don't need the media for doing this kind of thing. You know, if you're Coldplay and you've got however many Twitter followers or whatever your mailing list is, if you want to tell them what you're doing or you're planning to do on Monday, you can do it very, very effectively directly, you know.
Is it very obvious these days to see that the media is following in the stardust and the coattails of the stars, rather than, you know, in decades past, maybe it seemed to be a little bit different, that, you know, there was the voice of God kind of idea of the media telling people, this is the hip band, this is what you should be going to spend your pocket money on a Saturday. Is it very obvious how that's changed?
Well, I suppose there's less of that, but that was never as powerful as people think. You know, that applied with certain, I can think of certain very odd cases, you know, like Nick Kent's famous review of television's Marquee Moon, you know, in the NME, which it had only come out on import, and I think 200 copies were brought into London and they were gone that weekend, you know. But that didn't happen very often at all, you know. And so, you know, people can, it's not just a question of the artists hyping their own records. You know, there has to feel that there's some kind of sympathetic space around these records. And so you get this kind of halo effect. You know, the interesting thing about hype is it generally teaches people to overestimate things in their own mind. I think the classic hype in the last year is the Kendrick Lamar record. And nobody's done that, apart from everybody that I've spoken to has said, I've not met anybody who said it's anything less than a masterpiece. Let me tell you, it's not a masterpiece. It's all right. It's got one good song.
Controversial words there.
Barack Obama has said it's his record. Come on. No, that's not your record of the year. That's what some committee have told you. You've got to make your record of the year. And everybody has got onto that bandwagon.
Whatever next, you'll be saying that David Cameron doesn't really love the Smiths. We're talking about hype. Around the table, we have David Hepworth, Emily Bryce Perkins and Alice Vincent. We're going to take a little break now. We're going to head out to New York to Bleecker Street Records. With all this chat about music, we're interested to hear how the in-store experience has changed for people buying and selling music. How do you create excitement around the products in your shop when people are making online purchases? And what changes have shopkeepers seen in the way albums are talked about by their customers? Monocle's Sarah Aridi speaks to General Manager Peter Kay.
Vinyl fever certainly caught on with younger people, younger kids. So they're really driving our business. And these are people that didn't grow up with records, didn't grow up with turntables, but are crazy about records. So I think they might still do things online. I don't know what they're downloading. I don't know what they're doing on their computer. But when it comes to music, their favorite bands or classic band, they're actually coming here and buying it on record.
So do you still get people coming in who are excited about new releases?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when Adele's newest album, 25, came out, she actually restricted that album from going on streaming sites, which you probably know about. So you had to come into a store like this and buy the physical product. So people are crazy about her to begin with, and the fact that you could only buy it in a record store. We had calls days prior, weeks prior, when you're going to have it, if you're going to have it, and whatever we had, we sold out immediately.
Do you ever get people queuing up outside of the store anymore?
Yes, but those aren't special events. There's a special record event called Record Store Day that happens twice yearly. And for those events, we do get a queue outside the door. But those are very special, manufactured, maybe even slightly contrived events where only special releases are released on that day, and that day only. So you have to rush in and try to get it before it sells out, otherwise you may never find it again. So that generates, again, maybe a manufactured a need, but people do respond to it in a huge way.
Do you think that that sort of fandom romance of the hype is gone? You know, as I mentioned, this is all about hype, so I feel that people don't really tend to get so emotional about new bands because they have access to so many, and also they want to hear so many more.
Well, I think they care as much as it catches their ear. We have some very young people on staff here, and they play contemporary music. And when somebody, another young person responds to you like, oh, who is this band? You know, what are you playing? And we do get that a lot. The first question is, who is this? The second question is, do you have the vinyl? Do you have the record? And if you don't, you say, well, we have the CD. Let's just say that's the case. That's sort of a letdown. So, yes, people are passionate about music, about their music, the soundtrack to their lives, if you will. That's going to be a constant no matter what. And yes, I think people, I don't think that excitement is ever going to go away.
So I'm curious about how you promote new albums. Is the way that you promote an album in store different to how you used to? Or do you even have to do much to promote an album anymore?
No, that's maybe where social media or downloads come into play. You don't really have to promote bands so much anymore because people probably have already heard it before an old crusty dude like I will ever get to hear of it. So they come into the store knowing what they want, what they're looking for. They've already heard it someplace else, but now they want to own it. They may have already even downloaded, I don't know, but they want to have something that they can physically hold on to. And that's why they come to a place like this.
Do you think there's the same hysteria surrounding music releases that there used to be in general?
Well, that may depend purely on the artists themselves. For some people, yes. For other bands, probably less or so. But that's always been the case. I think if it was just purely downloading, people might not be so excited about it because you wouldn't have to go anywhere to get the music. You wouldn't have to be anywhere to get the music. You'd be in your pajamas in your bedroom, which I think is, you know, to a guy like me who did grow up with records, who did grow up with a turntable, seems to be much less of an experience. Maybe that's what's catching fire with these young people who are driving the market.
That was Peter Kay, general manager of Bleecker Street Records in New York City, speaking to Monocle's Sarah Aridi. After the break, I'll continue my hyped-up chat with my guests, Alice Vincent, Emily Bryce Perkins, and David Hepworth. Stay tuned.
Travel in comfort with the help of the Monocle shop. It's the place to select the best bags, passport wallets, travel guides, and, of course, the latest issue of the magazine to entertain you on your lounger. We have a great lineup of special collaboration bags with Porter in Japan, including the new Overnighter bag, ideal for a city weekend trip. And then there's the limited edition Remova multi-wheel, made from lightweight polycarbonate in a special Monocle edition. Visit our stores in London, New York, Toronto, Singapore, Tokyo, and Hong Kong, or shop online at monocle.com. Be the one turning heads at the luggage carousel.
Welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bound. I'm joined by arts and entertainment writer for the Daily Telegraph, Alice Vincent, music writer and former editor of Smash Hits, among others, David Hepworth, and publicist Emily Bryce Perkins. And today we're answering the question, or attempting to, whatever happened to hype. I'm going to move my gaze to my right, to the formerly jangly bangled Emily Bryce Perkins. Before we turned on the microphones, I asked you to let us in on a few secrets, let a little bit of daylight in upon magic of the dark arts of being a publicist. But I'm overstating the case here, aren't I? Because there aren't any really, are there? And perhaps all, as three journalists and one publicist around this table, perhaps we're all colluding in the same kind of maybe attractive, maybe nice smelling soup that is the way the media works. There aren't any kind of tricks of the trade, perhaps, that you can tell us about.
I'd say, as a publicist and obviously having to maintain those relationships with journalists, the main thing that you should do is just
invite them out for a drink.
Always get drunk with them first before anything.
Before you've had the, yeah.
Before
okay.
anything. But it's just really making them understand that when you are really hyping something, like, you've got to really believe in it. Like, just, they'll smell it. Just so when you do have something that's a bit, and you think, you know, that, then you can pull those favours because you're going to go to them with the exclusives of the things that you really, really like. So it's just, I just think, I mean, that's the trick of the trade, but it's not really, it's just
so
obvious.
It's a bit of, like, gut instinct.
Yeah, so, you know, certain journalists, they'll only hear from me if I really, really, really have got something amazing. And just don't, yeah, just get drunk with them in the meantime. Don't bother them with everything.
So there's obviously that element of trust that
you
can't tell someone that white is black and vice versa.
Exactly.
But you have to always operate in shades of grey.
Yeah.
I mean nothing by that.
Okay. But you also have to kind of convince them that they're somehow special.
Right.
What, the journalists?
Yeah. Over this particular transaction.
Yeah.
Because the thing I've found, you know, in the last 10 years or whatever, people sending out emails that, you know, the press releases on emails, and then they're expecting magazines to publish those details. And you've already published them. You've put them out there, you know what I mean? And so that's kind of threatened that relationship, you know. And so the best PRs in music are the ones who, they use what influence they've got very sparingly. They don't do it all the time. Mm-hmm. If you're ringing up and really excited about something every 2 weeks, nobody is convinced at all. If you do it once a year, it'll probably be effective.
Yeah, yeah.
There is something to be said for those phone calls. I got one earlier in the year, and I won't give away who from or what it was about, because that will give away who it's from. But I don't hear it from her very often, but I know every time she calls my mobile phone, it's going to be a big deal. And it was. And I was at this event with very few other journalists, and it was like the biggest art story of the year. And it was like, whoa. And Alice, this is massive. I can't tell you what it is. Just get to this place next Thursday. And that's when you'll go. As you say, these endless press releases, most of them get deleted. Yeah, I'm sorry.
They don't even get opened. You know, they go straight in the bin. You know, you have to make everything a personal communication to have any effect nowadays.
I feel that maybe our conversation needs to be hyped a little bit. This is something we can listen to. Holly, producer Holly, has compiled a hype mashup. Pray silence for that.
Thousands of fans in the world's capitals queued up overnight to get their hands on the latest gadgets as soon as doors opened.
Not content with spending $50 million to record his album, which Michael Jackson could have used to build a small hospital or buy six of the most expensive Ferraris ever sold at auction, the hype continues. To coincide with the release of the album, his record company Sony have built a replica of the statue that appears on the album cover.
It's 5 a.m. in Myeongdong, one of Seoul's main shopping districts. The chilly weather has not stopped these people, who have been in line for days. The reason? This SPA store is one of roughly 250 shops in 61 countries where Balmain and H&M launched a collection on Thursday.
But it's going to be hard for anyone to ignore the coming tidal wave of Star Wars hype.
It was intense.
All we have to say, this movie is going to be epic.
It's going to be amazing.
Amazing, hands down.
It was so worth. I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just really, really excited.
I love them. I don't care what anybody thinks. I love the Beatles for them, and I'll always love them. Even when I'm 105 and an old grandmother, I love them. And Paul McCartney, if you are listening, Adrian from Brooklyn loves you with all her heart. I love you, Paul, and please come to the window so I can just see you. I saw you smoking before, and I kissed the limousine you looked at him. But I love you, and I want you, Paul. Please look at it. And Ringo, you can look at it too, because I like you.
Don't believe the hype. Well, that was Holly Fisher's hype mashup. I hope we all like that. Parts of that were rather moving. Parts of that made me feel like I needed to go and take a hot shower or a cold bath. I don't know. And lots of that was quite retrospective as well. And I guess that's maybe kind of bringing the conversation full circle, David, actually, with the fact that it seems almost to be something from a bygone era, this notion of the Svengali of hype. Somehow.
Yeah, I never quite believed in Svengalis who plotted all this stuff. You know, was it Bruce Springsteen saying you can't start a fire without a spark? You know, it's got to be like that. You know, and people got hysterical about the Beatles in the way that they didn't get hysterical about Herman's Hermits. You know, the public are absolutely not stupid. Interesting thing about hype is that it's always applied to other people. We always think, you know, he has been a victim of hype. I have simply joined in general enthusiasm. You know,
right. It's
something that hoodwinks other people, never me. You know, because really what it applies to is people like being excited. They like feeling that other people share their excitement. And the two products we haven't actually talked about, but it was probably touched on in that package, there are two products that hype themselves. One is the iPhone. And the other is Star Wars. It strikes me nobody has to spend a penny marketing those things.
At
all. People do it for them.
Well, you actually did my bit of script for me, because that's exactly what I was supposed to talk about off the back of that package. And you're right. But you're absolutely right. Alice, these seem to be the things that you don't need to spend any money on to get the message across, to get people queuing around the block for movie tickets, or to spend £500 on a new telephone, right?
Right, yeah. Movie tickets and gig tickets as well, for the right person. I mean, crikey, the hell people went through trying to get Adele tickets, Justin Bieber tickets, and they don't need any hype. I mean, if anything, these artists are instituting acts against touts to actively stop people buying their tickets because it's such a problem. And I think it's because people, you know, the one thing you can still put hype on is being somewhere and taking a photo and putting on your self-promotion Twitter feed and being there. You know, in an age when we can get everything instantly, it's a, still an event and experience that people will hype and want.
Can I just add one thing that's transformed gig tickets and the hype around them is credit card booking. And there was a time if you wanted to go and see Led Zeppelin, the only way you'd do it, you'd go down to Earl's Court and you would queue. You know what I mean? Nowadays, it's a system that favours the most affluent, the most savvy, the people with the greatest amount of time on their hands. You know, so it becomes a competitive sport. Can I get tickets for Adele and boast to my neighbours at a dinner party that I've got them? These are people who 20 years ago would not have been interested in music at all. But credit card booking and technology has allowed them to have an awakened interest, a new interest.
One day you'd have sent a man down to Earl's Court, now you just click refresh. Emily, let's turn to you finally. We'd love to know, as we said, there aren't any perhaps secrets to this dark art of hype and publicity. But I wonder, you touched on the idea of almost not being able to be the boy that cries wolf with the way that you write releases and that you speak to journalists about the things that you've got on your roster. Is that something you kind of have to, you know, right at the beginning of 2016 here, that you see the year before you, you know some of the projects you're going to be working on. Do you have to be quite planny about this?
Yeah,
do you
absolutely.
Do you have to have a little kind of map of the world with little sort of poker chips?
Absolutely. Especially with, you know, things like the Olympics and whatever, because you just know that things will get lost. So it's, definitely planning ahead and working out. I think, you know, your choice of clients. I think I'm quite fortunate now I can choose clients that I really enjoy and that I feel 100% comfortable PRing. But I just always feel sorry. And you guys would have received many press releases from those PRs. You just think, oh, what you have? I feel so sorry for you that you have to do this. So I think, yeah, I'm lucky in that respect.
It's the fourth year of getting calm and carry something.
Yeah,
emails.
Yeah, forward plan and make sure. And that's the thing, you know, do keep in contact with a journalist when you actually don't have anything to PR. I think that's the other thing, because it's building those relationships and just making sure that, you know, you do spend some time nurturing.
This is my Jerry Springer moment at the end of the programme, and I wonder if we've learned anything. Well, the question was, whatever happened to hype? And I think maybe it's kind of going strong, but the emphasis on the people that are doing the hyping, and maybe the artists themselves, or maybe the people, or the PRs are going straight onto social media, and maybe cutting out the media middleman. I wonder if we think that makes the quality of the things that are written maybe better. David, do you feel that that although the media has been, music journalism perhaps has kind of become disenfranchised from the stuff that it writes about somehow, but maybe it's a little bit truer.
Oh, well, music journalism doesn't exist in any, you know, in the way that it used to at all, you know, but I think hype does still exist, but the public do it. That's my point. With social media, everybody can enjoy being part of the hype. And they do.
That's what it's
all about, saying, I'm into this, you know, and can I get points, you know, in my social circle by being into this? They've suddenly got a way to do it. So they're all at it. So there's no point journalists being bitchy about it. You know, they're only doing what journalists had to themselves for years and years and years.
I think that's a fitting way to end this programme. Whatever happened to hype of a storied amount of music magazines, David Hepworth and publicist Emily Bryce Perkins. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was the ever hyperable Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thank you very much for tuning in.